Chicken.
Vaccines in France are popular. 80% of the formerly vaccine-skeptical nation is now fully vaccinated. That has many saying that seemingly scapegoating the unvaccinated is a way for Macron to solidify a precarious re-election bid.
Despite his immensely controversial tenure, Macron retains a hardcore base of support of around 20%. It's been long assumed that it will be enough to get him into the second round, where he will defeat a challenger from the far right, like in 2017.
The decision is are very influenced by the fact that the election are coming in April. So it's really difficult to go to the mandatory vaccination for Emmanuel Macron. Maybe he want to wait for his re-election to go from the vaccinal pass to the mandatory vaccination.
The vaccine pass will likely be contested in France's top court, but it is expected to go into effect this week. The Omicron variant is far less deadly than previous versions, giving hope that the pandemic is ending. But it appears that the nation's pandemic policies will be a major part of the presidential election this April. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
Genocide, the deliberate destruction of an ethnic, national, racial, or religious group. There have been many, with death tolls in the millions, and the threat of another is always around the corner. Organizations like the IHRC are fighting to prevent that by raising awareness. The theme of this year's event, how do states sanitize genocide?
Genocide is sanitized. It's not only the genocidal state which actively attempts to sanitize its crimes. Other states are also actively involved. Those which supply the weapons and other instruments of annihilation. Those which refuse to acknowledge or call out the genocide for fear of the obligations to prevent and punish the crimes taking place that they would be placed under. Those which fear offending trading partners.
There are more than 1,500 monuments across London, commemorating everyone from controversial figures like Churchill to even fictional characters like Sherlock Holmes. But you would be hard-pressed to find a monument that commemorated the 1 million people killed in the Great Irish Famine, a genocide orchestrated by the British.
The British government conveniently omits England's role in bringing about genocides like the so-called potato famine from school books, like many other regimes that weave history in a way that justifies crimes against humanity.
Here's a real chance for the UK government and the Department for Education to truly celebrate, or rather I should say commemorate, the diverse groups of people that it can encourage our systems and our schools to remember because of who their predecessor governments have exterminated in previous centuries, whether we're talking about the indigenous people of Australia, Malays, Chinese, Indian subcontinent, Iranians, Iraqis.
Genocide Memorial Day is held on the anniversary of Israel's Operation Cast Lead in 2008 to 2009, which killed hundreds of Palestinians. Again in 2021, thousands of Palestinians were killed at the hands of the Israeli regime, which legitimizes its actions by evoking another genocide, the Holocaust. The vicious cycle continues, and therefore, so must the fight against dehumanization and ethnic cleansing. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Yemeni army and its allied Ansarullah forces have hit the heart of the United Arab Emirates, with officials in Abu Dhabi confirming two fire incidents near storage facilities of an oil firm and the city's international airport. It came just days after the Yemeni army repelled an attack by Emirati-backed mercenaries in the province of Ma'rib, killing and injuring dozens. In a statement, the Yemeni army says Monday's attack inside the UAE was a warning to stop its involvement in the Saudi-led war on the country. Earlier this month, the Yemeni army released footage of a captured UAE-flagged vessel, which had trespassed into the country's territorial waters. Army spokesman Yahya Sari said the ship was carrying military equipment and was engaged in hostile acts against Yemen. The UAE joined the Saudi-led coalition in 2015 in order to reinstate a friendly regime in Yemen. In April 2018, the Emirates deployed its military to Socotra. an island that overlooks the strategic Bab el-Mandab Strait, a main shipping route connecting the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea. 2 weeks later, Saudi troops were also deployed there, a move the Yemenis described as a coup against legitimacy. The UAE had largely scaled down its military presence in Yemen in 2019, but continued funding, arming, and training mercenaries in support of separatists in southern Yemen. It became quite clear when forces loyal to former Yemeni government, aided by UAE-backed brigades and Saudi warplanes, reclaimed the oil and gas-rich southern province of Shabwa earlier this month and made advances toward Ma'rib province. However, the Yemeni army's repeated retaliatory drone and missile attacks inside Saudi Arabia and now in the UAE show the coalition is losing the momentum. It has also inflicted heavy losses on Saudi and Emirati-backed militias operating inside the country. Since last year, the Yemeni army, along with Ansarullah forces, have liberated nearly 20,000 square kilometers of land in several large-scale operations. Nearly 7 years of bombing campaigns and blockade on Yemen have proved fruitless for Saudi Arabia and some of its regional and international allies, including the U.S., as they fail to achieve their intended goals. On the other hand, Yemen's armed forces and the popular comedies have grown stronger against the invaders and give them crushing response to their deadly mayhem in the impoverished nation.
For Afghan students, the year 2021 was full of obstacles. The educational system was disrupted and many schools across remained closed, while a ban on girls returning to secondary schools is still in place. Now the Filimoy School has opened for students in Afghanistan to facilitate learning. This Iranian platform provides Afghan students with free educational courses. Samira and Fatima are students of secondary school. After being banned from attending their classes, they decided to join online courses.
Hello everyone, how are you?
Now they are students of Filimoy School and they are happy with everything it has provided.
It has been almost 152 days that we have been away from school. We felt very desperate. In order to stay involved with education, my friends and I gather here and benefit from Filimoy School's online courses. The lessons and videos provided by Filimoy are very interesting and creative.
Teachers and educational consultants believe that online courses are a good means of learning, especially at a time of crisis and pandemic. Mahdi Ishaqi, who is an education consultant, has found Filimoy Online School very professional and useful for Afghan students.
I found the Filimoy School extraordinarily useful, especially for Afghan students who are affected by a political crisis and the coronavirus pandemic. This is very valuable academically too. I'm sure our students highly welcome Filimoy School because they are in need of such opportunities.
Filimoy School says it has provided the service to Afghan students because of their difficult educational conditions. So now every Afghan boy and girl from preschool to the 9th grade can access the same lessons as Iranians do. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Bedouin Palestinians have been living in the Naqab Desert for decades, even before the creation of Israel. It's home to tens of thousands of residents who view these lands as privately owned. Still, Israel has refused to recognize these Palestinian inhabitants and is now claiming that the lands have been registered and belong to the Israeli regime. The latest incursion into Bedouin territories gave rise to a fresh round of escalation, with angry Palestinians turning out, saying the Israeli forestation project is not but an excuse to force them out of their land.
The goal of the tree planting is to prevent the expansion of the Bedouin villages, to prevent a future recognition in our villages, and this action is somewhat political. The extreme right wing used it to spoil the relationship between Jews and Arabs in this place. We say to them, this is our land, these are our villages, we've been here for hundreds and thousands of years, and we will simply not move from this place.
The crackdown turned violent in no time, with Israeli forces targeting the Palestinian demonstrators with all they had, from rubber-coated bullets and tear gas to stun grenades and skunk water. Palestinian families have been living in constant fear and apprehension due to Israel's forced displacements. A controversial case has been the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Israel has for some time been seeking the expulsion of several Palestinian families from their houses in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Al-Quds, in what pro-Palestine groups have been seeing as the continuation of Israel's attempts at ethnic cleansing and Judaization of Palestinian territories. And the regime's demolition of Palestinian residences and businesses has turned into an almost daily occurrence. Palestinians say settlements built on occupied territory will get in the way of them building their future state. They have demanded that Israel freeze all settlement activity if it wants the peace process to resume. But Israel is pushing ahead, taking no heed of those demands. Some experts believe Israel has been planning from the start to expand and perpetuate its occupation, and the two-state solution was never an option for the Tel Aviv to begin with.
There was never a plan for a future Palestinian state. A two-state solution, so-called, is not a solution. It's a delusion, and it's an illusion that was instituted by basically Ben-Gurion in the 1920s.
All these developments take place as the international community plays the role of a silent witness of the Israeli colonial policies. And all these Palestinian pleas for help and justice are falling on deaf ears. That has many wondering what can be done to make the world quit its role as a silent observer of the injustice that's been committed against Palestinians.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust. From the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps. From the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. and have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
This is called the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill. If passed through Parliament, the bill will give more power to the police to shut down demonstrations and protesters, could even face prison, which could make peaceful protests and marches a thing of the past. Why did the UK Home Secretary suggest such a bill in the first place? Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at whether this bill represents a massive assault on civil liberties and other aspects of this bill which have been called a violation of human rights.
Soon, this might be illegal in the UK. Holding a banner, beating a drum, and raising your voice in protest. The government's controversial Police, Crime, Sentencing and Courts Bill is currently being debated at the House of Lords. If passed, any non-violent public assembly could be snuffed out.
There is a sense of impending doom. People here fear an Orwellian scenario in which democracy as they know it, although flawed, will become a thing of the past.
The new police powers would set conditions on the duration of protests, noise levels and locations. The British feel the walls are closing in on them, manifesting in more than just this bill.
We've got the worst poverty in Europe, we're the most unequal country in Europe, and we have one of the highest death rates from COVID in Europe as a result. Its treatment of migrants is absolutely appalling.
These are the citizens of the UK saying, we want to, we demand that we live in a free country. We are all here to defend ourselves, our rights, and journalists and publishers like Julian Assange who speak up and tell us what our governments are doing.
The bill also proposes to introduce new laws that penalise stopping on private and public land without authorisation. This would have the effect of criminalising the way of life of Gypsy, Roma and Traveller people.
This is an attack on our right to protest, it's an attack on Gypsy, Roma and Travellers people's right to live, where they've lived in their way of living for like time immemorial. We're seeing more stringent rules, more brutal rules being brought in, more strong policing powers, not just here, but around the world. We're seeing the Zionists up in the ante on the Palestinian people.
All of our struggles are connected, and we're representing the Arab people, and representing the fight against the state and against people's ability to speak against the state is crucial wherever we are.
The Tory government is fishing in murky waters, taking advantage of distractions like the pandemic to push through draconian laws like the Police Bill and the Borders and Nationality Bill. But the people out on London streets say they have the government sussed and won't stand for it. Bianca Rahimi, London.
We're guest joining us for this edition of The Spotlight. First, we have human rights activist and campaigner Natalie Strecker joining us from Jersey, Channel Islands. Also joining us, former British MP Chris Williamson, who joins us from Derby, the UK.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both. Looking at those scenes in those protests were pretty telling. So I'm going to start with you, Natalie Strecker, if I may. It's called Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill. Huge piece of legislation covering many aspects of the UK criminal justice system. Perhaps you can tell us what the controversial aspects of it are.
Well, I would say that there's probably too many to mention this evening. I mean, obviously, in effect, it outlaws protest. We see the targeting of minority groups, the legislation that will impact the Gypsy, Roma and Traveller community, which we need to remember is one of the most discriminated communities within the UK, not just in recent years, but actually since medieval times. And I think when we talk about the Gypsy, Roma and Traveller community, it's important to remember them in the context more widely of Europe, and how alongside the Jews they were the only other people that were identified as a group for extermination. And I think it's really important to remind people of that as we think about how this bill will impact them. But there's lots of other things, as per usual we see very ambiguous language used about the outlawing of people attaching themselves to things and to people. But what does attach mean? Does it mean just when you observe people locking themselves in, as you quite often see at arms factories and arms fairs, or does it also possibly mean people linking arms? So I think that there's numerous aspects of this bill, and actually amendments that I'm not even aware of as yet, of course, which have been added since before it went into the House of the Lords. So I think it's deeply concerning legislation and violates our human and civil rights on all levels.
Sure. Chris Williamson, I'm wondering what the thinking behind this was. I'm not sure if you can answer this, but, you know, was it something that they actually looked at to initially target certain segments of the British society, perhaps, for example, the ones who come out in protest, for example, the Roma, for example, minorities? Is that the approach, perhaps, that was used? Because it sure looks that way. And leading to the question, which seems to be the most controversial one, and that is to ban marches and demonstrations because they believe that it might seriously, and I don't know if I read this correctly, seriously disruptive, including being too noisy?
Well, I mean, I think the neoliberal capitalist system in this country is broken down. It isn't working, and people are fed up and are increasingly wanting to express their concerns about the way democracy operates in this country. We have a climate catastrophe on the horizon. People are rightly concerned about that. The government isn't acting swiftly enough to deal with that. We see racism and bigotry increasing in this country. We've seen the emergence of the Black Lives Matter campaigners, and obviously this has sent a shiver down the spine, it seems to me, of the establishment, because people are flexing their muscles. They are using the democratic right to demonstrate and to put pressure on the government, and it seems to me that this is an attempt to squash protest and to, you know, prevent these sort of inconvenient truths being highlighted on the streets. And this is a very dangerous and slippery slope, it seems to me, when we're talking about potentially jailing people for, you know, up to a year because, you know, they're protesting and you know, police don't like the noise or the route that they wish to take on a march, for example. And I think the other proposition, to potentially jail people for 10 years for defacing or damaging memorials. But I mean, we saw this last year, or the year before, I think it was, where a slave trader who had been venerated in Bristol had this statue torn down and thrown into the river. And obviously people are rightly upset and concerned about the way in which Britain's imperialist past is actually promoted and exalted. And it seems to me people have an absolute right to challenge that. And the government are seeking to prevent this and to clamp down in the most repressive way possible. I mean, this is reminiscent of a tin pot dictatorship, not the country which is supposed to pride itself on democracy.
Sure, but Priti Patel seems to think that this is okay, and I'm wondering what you would tell her, Natalie Strecker, when she says, yes, peaceful protest remains a cornerstone of democracy, but argues that there has been a significant change in protest tactics. So she's coming in on protest tactics through that angle, in which she says protesters are exploiting gaps in the law.
Obviously there's lots of things I would say to Priti Patel, but probably most of them are not appropriate at this moment whilst being interviewed. I guess what I would say is if we just need to look at our history, if I speak as a female, how was it we gained our rights just to be able to vote and to be seen as equals within society? Was only possible through the tactics that are being used currently today. That women had to take themselves on the streets, take direct action to be noisy. The problem is, if we look at the other tactics, quite often you'll have people sit down and sign petitions, but we know that no change really comes without people being noisy, and that's one of our rights. And I've spoken about women's suffrage, but also the civil rights movement, the movement to end the slave trade. I think that Priti Patel needs, quite often they'll talk about in November, near Remembrance Day, the importance of the sacrifices our soldiers, grandparents made in order to gain our freedoms. They talk about this a lot, and yet, at this very moment, they're looking at removing those freedoms that were fought for. So are they really honouring the sacrifices they make when they're looking at bringing such draconian laws? And listening to what Chris said about a tin pot dictatorship, I would say Priti Patel is a tin pot dictator. And I think it's not just authoritarian, it's actually fascist that we see ourselves slipping into the UK. It's really good. I would encourage people to look up the warning signs of fascism, which is in a Holocaust museum, and it highlights the different steps. And we have ticked pretty much all of those steps now. So it is really frightening times, just as ordinary human beings who want to take a stance for things that are important to us. And what I would add is that this isn't even a left-right issue. It comes down to whether we believe in basic freedom of speech, whether we believe in the protection of our civil liberties and individual liberties.
Indeed. That's the point that has been made. We're going to talk about that in a broader respect when it comes to the UK, but I can't help but also look at this, Chris Williamson, in terms of some of the not only most colorful protests, but some of the most vociferous and large-scale protests that have taken place in the UK over the years, which has to deal with the issue of Palestine. And I'm wondering, given the close relationship that this government, especially Priti Patel, has with Israel, that do you think that this could be one of the driving forces that maybe led as an incentive to come up with the laws and provisions behind this?
Well, I'm sure that featured in their thinking. I don't think that was the only factor, but I'm sure that certainly was one of them. You're absolutely right. And it's not just Priti Patel, of course, that's very close to the Israeli apartheid regime. The vast majority of parliamentarians are supporters of the apartheid state of Israel. Half the members of the Parliamentary Labour Party, which is supposed to be the party that stands up for civil rights and democracy and anti-imperialism, and yet around 50% of the Parliamentary Labour Party are members of an organisation called Labour Friends of Israel. So yes, certainly. And I think now, because in this modern age of smartphones and so on, what we're seeing is citizen journalism taking place in Gaza, and young people who have learnt good English in the UN schools there are able to use their smartphones and then to upload those images onto the internet, which actually illustrates the absolute barbarity of the Israeli regime and the propaganda that we are relentlessly subjected to in this country, and have been, you know, ever since Israel was established and back in 1948. And much of the atrocities that they perpetrated were unknown to the British people. Well, that's no longer the case. And the bombardment that we saw against Gaza in the spring of last year saw people coming onto the streets in this country in unprecedented numbers, and not just in the capital either. Up and down the country, small towns and large cities in the provinces, saw people coming onto the street. In my own city of Derby, which is a modest-sized city, it saw the biggest demonstration in Derby's history in support of the Palestinian people. Now, of course, this is something which, you know, the government, it seems to me, are not prepared to tolerate. Sure. And I'm sure that this will be used, if these measures are successfully put onto the statute book, to limit the ability of people to highlight the atrocities of the Israeli regime and to support the Palestinian people. But of course it goes much wider than that, and you know, we've seen the Insulate Britain activists in this country who have been drawing attention to the scandal of fuel poverty, with millions of people struggling to heat their homes, having to make desperate choices between eating adequately or heating their homes adequately. And there's all sorts of health conditions. Thousands of people die every single year in this country, in the fifth biggest economy in the world, because they can't afford to heat their homes properly, let alone the impact of climate change is having on the way of life of people, if indeed nothing is done to actually, you know, address that. And so,
sure,
you know, they are taking direct action methods. I mean, and Natalie talked about the role of the suffragettes and the direct action that they engaged in. And
sure,
you know, direct action has an absolute and important role to play in a democracy, and it's through direct action actually that many of the advances that we made in this country in terms of democratic rights for the citizens of Britain has been brought about in the first instance as a consequence of direct action. And
sure,
this is a real attempt to try and, you know, stifle it and prevent it, but I'm sure they won't succeed, and you know, people, it will make people more determined. But what we will see is our prisons filling up.
Okay.
Of course there's an issue there, because all of our prisons have been privatized, so there's money to be made out of imprisoning people in this country. It's an absolute scandal. The system is completely broken in this country, and people are waking up to that. And regrettably, we've got establishment parties on both sides,
right,
of the chamber in Parliament who are not really speaking up for the people. So people are taking to the streets to actually make their voices heard. And as I say, this is an attempt to stop them having their voices heard and the pressure being applied.
Well, that's the whole issue here, Natalie Strecker. I think our guest there, in a sense, nailed it on the head when Chris Williamson said that this is not going to stop people from coming out. We could talk about what may amount as the protests take place, and then the police make decisions as to whether these protests are following any guidelines or not. But I'd like to take a look at the bigger picture there in the UK when it comes to just freedom, when it comes to the whole notion of democracy, because you in a sense talk about how this is becoming a fascist state, perhaps authoritarian. I think you used the word dictatorship. I know that the UK has, by some accounts, been compared to being a police state. Maybe that also leads the lines that you were speaking about, the UK, in terms of the freedom being chipped away at. This is a big strike to freedom in the UK. What are the consequences that we're going to see as a result of this? What other areas can you name for us, if you can?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's going to impact every area of our life, you know, because a lot of this is about whether the police agree for you having a protest or the government. Well, it's, if the government agrees with it, then it's not really a protest, is it? It's a parade. And I think it's important to kind of remember that. But, Chris quite rightly said before about the different things that are, you know, society is unravelling as we see the collapsing of capitalism, the neoliberal project, as we see ecological breakdown, escalating. This is going to cause more and more unrest. So in terms of freedoms, if people don't have the right to go out on the streets, then it's going to impact other freedoms, the freedom and the right to life. you know, the right to security and all these other things. I think it's deeply concerning, but also how it will impact education that takes place, you know, the sense of, you know, the personal agency that we have as individuals. I think there are so many ways that this will impact us. And of course, we're focusing on a policing bill, but there are other bills that have been brought in already that signals that we are now living in a police state. So if you look at the covert human intelligence sources bill, which in effect means that the police and the intelligence agencies are able to commit any crime against you know, private citizens without exception. There is no, without caveat. You know, we're not, whereas in the past this used to be, you know, for the ambiguous term national security, this can also be used in terms of protecting the UK economy from harm. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean a trade unionist trying to organise a general strike, or to protect, you know, to prevent public disorder? What does that mean? Does it mean, you know, torturing or even killing, you know, somebody sure. who's looking to raise, you know, a subject matter that impacts them? So I think that it's hollowing out our civil liberties, and it's going to impact our freedoms. And in fact, there's probably things that we haven't even anticipated at this moment in time. And one thing I perhaps didn't mention when we're talking about the different aspects of the law is this ASVO, really, that if somebody's been to protests that haven't been approved of, and, you know, two protests, I think it is, in the last 5 years, this bill will prevent them from being not only being able to attend protests, but also being able to encourage people on social media or elsewhere to attend protests.
Right.
It's deeply concerning.
Sure, of course, because they don't want you to spread the word or trying to gather people, whether it's through social media means or otherwise. And you talked about other legislation that's being debated, and I have to ask you about this one because this has raised eyebrows and shocked many, Chris Williamson, and that is the Nationality and Borders Bill, which, among other provisions, it would allow government to strip people of their British citizenship. You know, when you take a look at that, and they can do that without notice, it seems like, what is your impression of that? I mean, you know, when you add up all these different things that are happening in the UK, of laws that are going to be passed or will be passed, it really does come down to perhaps what our guest there, Natalie, has said.
Very controversial, and you'd think, given the scandal of the what happened to the Windrush generation, where we saw people, children who'd lived here all their lives virtually, but didn't have papers and weren't able to necessarily prove that they got British citizenship, were being deported back to the Caribbean. Absolutely outrageous, and this caused huge controversy when it eventually came to light a few years ago now. And yet here we are with this new legislation which is being put through, which is kind of a repetition and actually even worse than potentially what happened to the Windrush generation. And people are right to be fearful about the implication of this. But, you know, as well, I mean, and, you know, Natalie mentioned it, I can't help but to refer back to the point about the covert human intelligence sources bill, and because that actually, and there was an attempt by the opposition in the House of Commons to exclude, because it gives agents of the state the right to commit criminal conduct, and there was an attempt in the House of Commons to limit that criminal conduct, to prevent it from being used to rape, torture or murder people. That could not be done under the basis of this criminal human intelligence sources legislation, and that was voted down. And so it seems to me the government is essentially therefore giving the green light to murder, rape and torture people. I mean, what, this is unbelievable. What is happening? It's outrageous. And so, yes, I mean, you know, the repressive legislation which is being pushed through and which isn't being resisted sufficiently vigorously enough by the official opposition in the House of Commons, or indeed being reported upon by the corporate media, you know, by the Fourth Estate, they're doing an incredible disservice.
Sure.
To the people of this nation. And that's why public protest is so important, to actually raise these issues, because we are being ill-served by the media and by our parliamentarians, who should be there to actually hold the executive, to hold the government to account, to stop these repressive measures being pushed through. You know, Britain used to sort of pride itself on its democratic traditions, on spreading democracy around the world, and yet
indeed
here we are in a situation where more and more repressive legislation is being pushed through almost on a kind of a monthly basis now. It's quite shocking, and it's really important that we do everything we can, I think, to mobilize opposition to it.
Sure. Who knows? Maybe next time around we can't even debate this on a media program like this one. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time, but let me thank both of you, human rights activists and campaigner Natalie Stryker. Thank you so much for your thoughts. And former British MP Chris Williamson there from Derby, UK. Thank you so much. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Ikova Tahwe, entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye until next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. The English Radio.
ولقد يسرنا القرآن للذكر فهل من مدكر
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left you last Friday, and here is Ayah 31 and 32 of Surah Tur.
قُلْ تَرَبَّصُوا فَإِنِّي مَعَكُمْ مِنَ الْمُتَرَبِّصِينَ أَمْ تَأْمُرُهُمْ أَحْلَامُهُمْ بِهَذَا أَمْ هُمْ قَوْمٌ طَاغُونَ
Say, O Prophet to the disbelievers, wait, I too am waiting along with you. Is it their intellect which prompts them to say this, or are they a rebellious lot? Remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last week, we said it is the habit of the disbelievers to try to belittle the prophets of God by calling them names and accusing them of madness or being fanciful poets in a vain bid to prevent people from being guided to the path of God. In their blind enmity, the pagans of Arabia, desirous of seeing the end of Islam, wished harm and used to say that they were awaiting a fatal accident for Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. God, the Almighty Protector, however, made their devilish plots go awry. Thus, as is clear by the ayah that we recited to you now, the Lord Most High commands the Prophet to tell the intransient disbelievers to wait and see the terrible results of their evil for themselves, since he himself is awaiting whatever divine providence has decided for him of the two excellent things, that is, either victory over them or martyrdom in the path of God. The next ayah refers to the chiefs of the pagan Arabs who imagined that they were persons of reason and intelligence in opposition to the logic of the Prophet. It addresses all those who regard themselves as reasonable and knowledgeable, asking them whether the reason and intelligence leads them to deny the manifest truth, when it is clear that such denial stands against reason. All this means the deniers of truth are nothing but a rebellious and disobedient lot, since the reason only follows their evil desires. From this ayah we learn that, number one, patience and the passing time make the results manifest, whether these are the benefits for the truthful or the terrible fate of the deniers of the manifest truth. Number two, intelligence is the gift of God and should be used in a proper way to ascertain the truth, rather than make it follow vain desires on the pretext of possessing knowledge and reason, since real reasoning never goes against reality and facts. Number three, it is disobedience of the rationality of divine commandments that turns the deniers of truth into rebels against logic and real reasoning of the prophets. Now we present you ayahs 33 and 34 of the same surah.
أَمْ يَقُولُونَ تَقَوَّلَهُ بَلْ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ فَلْيَأْتُوا بِحَدِيثٍ مِثْلِهِ إِنْ كَانُوا صَادِقِينَ
Do they say he has improvised it? Rather, they have no faith. Let them bring a discourse like it, that is, the Noble Qur'an, if they are truthful. These two ayahs, like the previous ones, refer to the manifest truth and its denial by the disbelievers, who used to say that the Noble Qur'an has been forged by the Prophet and not revealed to him by God Almighty. This is indicative of their lack of faith. They were told that they are Arabs like the Prophet, and as the Noble Quran is in eloquent Arabic, they can make attempts and try to produce the like of it, but they cannot. Even if all of their scholars get together, since these are the revealed words of the Almighty Creator, and therefore matchless and unparalleled. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, it is obstinacy and intransigence that clouds reasoning and leads to denial of truth and wild accusations against the prophets and truthful persons. Number two, the Noble Quran, as the revealed word of God Almighty, is the manifest miracle entrusted to the Prophet of Islam, and therefore inimitable. And number three, if the intransigent deniers of truth do not believe in the divinity of the Noble Quran, they can get together and assemble their leading scholars to try to produce the like of it, but they cannot write even a page matching its flawless eloquence and timeless wisdom. Now we listen to ayahs 35 and 36 of Surah Tur in conclusion of this week's episode.
أَمْ خُلِقُوا مِنْ غَيْرِ شَيْءٍ أَمْ هُمُ الْخَالِقُونَ أَمْ خَلَقُوا السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ بَلْ لَا يُوقِنُونَ
Were they created from nothing or are they their own creators? Did they create the heavens and the earth? Rather, they have no certainty. Through these ayahs, God Almighty raises a number of questions in order to awaken the dormant conscience of the disbelievers by presenting the most significant philosophical discussions in the simplest form of expression. Since the fundamental rule of all sciences is that there is no effect if there is no cause. In other words, nothing can come into being out of nothing or by itself. These two blessed ayahs present two assumptions. Firstly, is the human race created for a cause or without it? And secondly, is it possible that mankind is able to create itself? Both assumptions fail to stand against reason, since human beings are a phenomena, and every phenomenon is in need of a cause. Furthermore, mankind, which did not exist before, cannot cause its own existence. As reflected in Ayah 36, the polytheists were aware that God is the creator of them, the heavens and the earth. It is reiterated elsewhere in the Noble Quran that if the polytheists were asked concerning the creator of the heavens and the earth, they would rely that God is the creator. Thus, the main question presented in these ayahs is, why do you not believe in divine guidance instead of disobeying the prophets? The answer is simple. The intransigent disbelievers are not responding to the bidding of their own reason out of their vile disposition of mind and pursuit of vain desires, thereby failing to attain certitude regarding the omniscient an omnipotent creator. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, the Quran raises certain questions to open the minds of human beings so that they ponder upon facts and realities in a rational manner in order to refrain from obstinacy against truth. Number two, our intellect will help us when we are in pursuit of truth and not of vain desires or evil intentions. Number three, mankind is neither the creator of itself nor the creator of the world of existence. And number four, pondering on one's own self and the world around leads to God and certainty.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.